your automobile, a dog. You're in a foreign country, coming together in a strange place in a strange location. It's hard for us to wrap our minds around that, isn't it? How would you feel? Pardon?
Very scared.
Very scared. Now, if we can halfway envision ourselves in that situation, you can see how Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and many others must have felt when the Babylonian armies marched through Judea and Jerusalem and took them into battle. Now, notice, if you will, in this first chart that we handed out this morning is an image. And right beside each side of this image is a timeline. And it kind of helps us to visualize where we are chronologically in our study in the Old Testament, and it kind of points us where we are from a chronological standpoint to the birth of the sinless Son of God Himself, who would eventually die on the cross to make redemption complete and a reality. Did anybody have an opportunity to read ahead any at all in the book of Daniel? If you did, what are you thinking about the book itself? What lessons can we draw from this particular book that not only would be beneficial to those people that lived during that time span, but beneficial for us today under the new covenant that Jeremiah was talking about as these people were being led off into Babylonian captivity? God is still in charge. Not only that, but I think there is a beautiful lesson in the book of Daniel about how faith plays such a vital part in our lives. You know, so often we think about faith in a very small sense as just believing in the Christ, in the Son of God. Just believing in the gospel and the hope of heaven. But when you really stop and think about faith in the lives of these people that lived during the times of Daniel, you see how strong their faith was in spite of the situation that they were in as far as their lives were concerned and the situation that they were in. Remember, if you will, these people's lives had been completely uprooted. Their lives were about to change forever. And not only that, but their lives had to adjust to a different society, to a different people, and also you're going to see a great distinction between the faithful that were in Babylon as compared to the unfaithful. You know, one would think, well, when the Roman armies came through Jerusalem and Judea and chained those kings up and led them into Babylon, everything would be wonderful. Automatically, people would snap back to reality. Do you know how the unfaithful, the ungodly felt when they were led away? They were mad. Did it bring repentance? No. One would have thought that that it would, but it didn't. On the other hand, you had a group of the faithful, such as Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that had to adjust to living in a foreign country under a foreign king, living differently than they had ever lived before. Now, that's how we began the book of Daniel. Now notice, if you will, in the chart, you're looking at three visions that we'll be looking at as we study the book of Daniel. The second vision is pretty familiar to us because you've heard lessons preached from the second chapter of Daniel many, many times. I remember years ago, there was a lesson that was really popular in the Brotherhood, spoken by a preacher by the name of E.R. Harper. He was a Texas preacher, been dead for a number of years. But he worked a sermon up from Daniel chapter 2, and he titled that sermon, "The Kingdom the Prophets Saw." It's a wonderful sermon, still being preached by preachers all over the Brotherhood in many places in regards to the future kingdom. That section we normally think about and we're familiar with, but we normally do not connect the second two visions with that of the first. Daniel had three visions. One, the first vision that we'll be looking at this morning, was this image that we see on page 1. Now, following that vision, you're going to see visions 2 and 3 that we picture on the second page. And, of course, the second page being the Babylonian kingdom. Now, notice, if you will, there's a map at the above of page 2 that gives you a picture of the kingdom of Babylon. Remember, if you will, as we look at the Babylonian kingdom, you're going to notice that it has expanded tremendously. Because notice also, if you will, Babylon has overthrown Assyria and now has taken over everything that Assyria has had control of. And they also go through and they take control of Egypt, Judah, and Jerusalem, Edom, and other countries. So notice, if you will, on page 2, you see the Babylonian Empire as Daniel and his fellow brothers and sisters in Christ experienced as they were led into Babylonian captivity. And then the last chart is the description of three visions that Daniel had. The last vision, he saw a bear, he saw a leopard, and he saw an awful looking beast with a bunch of hands on it. Heads, horns on. And each one of those symbols represented a country. And of course, the first one, we've already looked at the Babylonian Empire. But the bear represented the Medo-Persian Empire. And the leopard represented the Grecian Empire. And of course, the horned beast represented the Roman Empire. So notice, if you will, as we look at these three charts, in essence, what you're looking at is the three visions that Daniel sees in the book of Daniel. I think there'll be three sheets laid right beside you. Those three sheets we have been going over it, and we've got to get you up where we are in our study. Now remember, if you will, we're just starting our study in the book of Daniel, and we're talking about the time span being about 600 B.C., before Christ. So you can kind of see how we've worked our way down from Genesis 1:1 all the way down to the time period of 600 B.C., 600 years before the birth of Christ. And you'll notice on this sheet the timeline as it goes down, as these other kingdoms come into play. Remember, if you will, this image is going to consist of four future earthly kingdoms. Now remember, if you will, what type of kingdom did Isaiah talk about when we looked at Isaiah the second chapter as well as Micah? What type of kingdom did Isaiah picture that was going to happen in the future?
A peaceful kingdom.
Absolutely. A kingdom unlike anything that they had ever seen or experienced in their lives. And this spiritual kingdom was going to begin and start from the city of Jerusalem. Now remember also, before we got to a study of the book of Isaiah, we looked at a statement by Joel in the second chapter of Joel, down about verse 28. And he tells us something about the nature of this kingdom, how it was going to come into existence. And it was going to come into existence with power, talking about the influence of the Holy Spirit on the lives of those people who were going to be added to that spiritual kingdom. Now, Daniel is going to pick up on that same frame of mind. Not only are we going to be talking about earthly kingdoms, but we're going to be talking about the spiritual kingdom that the prophets had been talking about. Giving people hope for the future. Now remember, if you will, both Israel, the 10 tribes there, and Babylon, Judah, Benjamin, Jerusalem, all of Israel is now into captivity. Their earthly kingdom, as they know it today, is over and done with. It'll never exist again in the form that it did, say, in the days of David, or even his son Solomon. Remember, we talked about how it divided into two groups. One group followed Jeroboam, one group followed Rehoboam. It was referred to as the northern and the southern kingdom, and we examined each one of those kings as we went through our study. So now we're picking up in the book of Daniel with God's people in captivity under Nebuchadnezzar. Now notice, if you will, in Daniel 1, verse 1, it kind of gives us some time span. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Remember, as we were looking at our kings, we handed out a chart with the kings. If you pull that chart out and you look at it, you're going to see that Jehoiakim reigned as king toward the end of the kingdom of Judah and Jerusalem. And notice, if you will, also, after Jehoiakim reigned, Coaniah, his son, reigned for a very short span of time. Then comes Zedekiah, and the kingdom crumbles, it falls, it's taken into captivity. Remember, if you will, as we were finishing up the book of Jeremiah, we were talking about how that the end of Jeremiah was done and written and prophesied of as the children of Judah were being taken into captivity. It was going to happen in at least two movements, possibly three. And of course, we said that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and that first 10,000 group that was taken into captivity is already there. So mind you, as Jeremiah ends his book and his prophecy, Daniel, a young man, begins his. Now, here's what we're going to notice. As we begin the prophecy of Daniel, some think that Daniel may have been 18, 20, maybe 25 years old at the time he and those three comrades were taken into captivity. But you're going to notice as we look at the book of Daniel, Daniel is going to start out as a young prophet, and before we get to chapters 5, 6, 7, and 8, you're going to see Daniel pictured as an old prophet. So the book of Daniel is going to lay out very quickly and very fast. How long was Daniel going to be in captivity, or how long was the children of Israel going to be in captivity?
70 years.
About 70 years. So you picture, if you will, a 20-year-old young man leaving his homeland, taken into captivity, and spend 70 years in captivity. You see, you can very quickly see Daniel as a 75, 80, 85, maybe even a 90-year-old man. Prophesying in the book of Daniel. As I said, Daniel is a book that we're very familiar with in the sense that we have lifted sections out of Daniel, used it so many times in our Bible classes to our young people. Anybody comment? What parts have we lifted out?
Yeah.
The fiery furnace and the lion's den. And you know, I'll bet you, when we were using those illustrations to our young children, teaching them those very valuable lessons, that we didn't think about Daniel being 75 or 80 years old when he was cast in the fire furnace, too, or in the lion's den. I didn't. But notice, if you will, as we said, it starts under the reign of Jehoiakim, and if you'll remember, Jeremiah started prophesying back in that span of time. Notice, if you will, in verse 3. The king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability to them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat, and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now, who is he talking about? And what do you think is taking place here in these first few verses of Daniel chapter 1? Yes. Evidently, the king had taken this group of people that they had taken on the first wave of captivity in Babylon and handpicked some young men to work in his kingdom and in his palace. And he is looking for people that are appealing from a physical standpoint, but also appealing from a mental standpoint. And of course, that's where Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego come into play, come into the picture. We don't know exactly how long. I'm thinking probably 3 years or longer. They had been in Babylon, and now they're faced with this first obstacle of faith. It says in verse 8, but Daniel proposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now how was Daniel reasoning in this thought process? Absolutely. He said, I do not want to defile myself, spiritually speaking, to eat the type of meats that they're requesting that we eat. Remember, if you will, when we talked about the children of Israel staying a year at the foot of Sinai, and we said that while they were spending that year at the foot of Sinai, not only did they receive the law, but they learned how to pick the priesthood from the tribe that they were to pick it from. And not only that, they were instructed as to how to carry out the worship. And they were instructed about certain foods that they were to eat and certain foods that they were to not eat or consume. So evidently in this diet, now, I'm sure that the king thought that this was the type of diet that would produce the most physically fit and mentally fit. Because after all, that's who he was looking for, and that's what he was trying to handpick. And Daniel said, I need to excuse myself from this. Now notice, if you will, in verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. Who would have been the prince of the eunuchs? Evidently, the king had put a person in charge of these eunuchs. You're going to gather together all of the choicest young men. And then from that group, you're going to pick the best of the best. And the Bible says that Daniel had found favor with this gentleman who was in charge. He calls himself the prince of the eunuchs. He said in verse 10, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me endanger my head to the king. What do you think he's saying here?
We don't need meat like the rest of them.
Well, he's saying, now Daniel, wait a minute. This is the diet of diets. And you're asking me to excuse you and others from this diet that the king says I'm supposed to feed to y'all. I'm going to nourish you with. Now, Daniel, this could kind of get me in hot water with the king. Because there's no way you can compete physically on the diet that you want to eat as opposed to the diet that the king wants. Now, notice, if you will, it says in verse 12, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days. Let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. What does pulse sound like to you?
It sounds like your blood pressure, but it's basically.
Yeah, we think about pulse when we, you know, check our blood pressure. It'd be common food. I think the first time I looked at it, I kind of thought, is this oatmeal, mush? You know, what is it? But like, but they would say it, it's vegetable. It's a diet of things that come from the vine, from the ground, we would say, no meat, no. If you look up the word, sometimes it talks about seeds, grains, vegetables. So you can see how that basically what Daniel is saying, okay, look, just give us 10 days. And let us eat this diet, and let the others eat the king's diet. Now notice, if you will, as we go a little bit further. It says, then let our countenances, in verse 13, be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them, and this matter proved them 10 days, and at the end of 10 days their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion. Thus Melchizedek took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them. Notice as we close out this chapter, as for these four children, God gave them knowledge, skill in all learning, and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now this verse kind of sets the tone for the rest of Daniel's life. Because he is going to be interpreting dreams for Nebuchadnezzar. The next king, and after Nebuchadnezzar's gone, the next king, and then last of all, Belshazzar, the last king, the last Babylonian. That lives, and of course is assassinated and killed by the invasion that led to the Medes and the Persians taking over the Babylonian Empire. Notice, if you will, as it closes in verse 20, in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. Does this sound like anything else we've ever read? Pardon? Okay, Joseph down in Egypt. Any other person in particular that asked for something special when he took over his reign over his big king?
Solomon.
Solomon asked for wisdom, understanding. So notice, if you will, as we begin the book of Daniel, and as we begin the first vision that Daniel has to interpret from Nebuchadnezzar, notice what's taking place in verse 2 of chapter 2. The king commanded to call the magicians, the astrologers, and the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans, for to show the king his dream. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spoke the Chaldeans to the king in Syria, O king, live forever. Tell thy servant the dream, and we will show the interpretation. Now, what's taking place here? What's happening?
They want to find out his dream so they can make up a story.
Well, it would be helpful if they had some tips to go by, that's for sure. But what was it that caused Daniel to come on to the scene? You see, Nebuchadnezzar had a problem. He had a dream that absolutely scared him to death. But he couldn't. could not remember anything about the dream. Any of y'all dream from time to time? My wife can have some of the craziest dreams you've ever seen. And she'll tell me, "You can't believe what I dreamed." I said, "No, I probably can't." Well, Nebuchadnezzar could not remember the dream, so he needed these magicians and these soothsayers, these wise men from a Babylonian background, to not only tell him what the dream was, but they wanted him to, that he wanted them to interpret this dream. And of course they couldn't do it. So Daniel comes in. Notice, if you will, what happens. Verse 12. Now let's back up to 10. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, "There is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore, there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such things as any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. And it is a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king except the gods whose dwelling is not reflected." Well, this caused the king was angry and furious and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Then Daniel answered with counsel, wisdom, to the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men about him. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, "Why is the decree so hasty from the king?" Then Daniel went in to desire of the king that he would give him time, that he would show the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house, made the thing known to Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah, his companions, that they would desire mercy of God of heaven concerning the secret. And then, of course, as you've read, they pray to God, and Daniel begins in verse 24 to start to explain what this dream is all about. Now, that's where we come to this first chart. Because Daniel, first of all, has to explain to them, "Now look, Nebuchadnezzar, here's what you dreamed about. Here's what scared you so bad. You dreamed about an image. And this image was a great statue. And each part of the statue represented something." And he tells the king that he is represented by the head of gold. And then he goes off and he said, "Now the Medo-Persian Empire is represented by the chest and the arms of silver." Now remember, if you will, in Isaiah the 45th chapter, Isaiah talked about this country. And from this country, the Medes and the Persians, there was going to be a man that he would raise up by the name of Cyrus. And Cyrus would make a decree. And the decree would allow all the children that were in Babylon and other places to go back to their home. This is going to be after the 70 years of Babylonian imprisonment. So he pictures this statue, this image, his chest and arms of silver representing the Medo-Persian kingdom. And as you know, that took place about 539 B.C. and went down to about 350 B.C. Now, the Medes and the Persians slipped in the Watergate, and we'll read a little bit further where Belshazzar was having a party, and they killed Belshazzar that night. Historical records that's been recovered says that the Medes and the Persians said they did not even have to lift the sword. That's how easy the kingdom was to take. And then he goes on and explains about the belly and the thigh of bronze. And he said that represents the Grecian kingdom. Remember, if you will, when you studied history, world history in high school, we learned about Alexander the Great and the Grecian king. So he tells Nebuchadnezzar that this part of that statue represented him. And then last of all, he talks about the legs of iron and the feet, part of iron and part of clay. And he said that represented the Roman Empire. So notice, if you will, he takes this image that the Babylonian king dreamed about, and he said this image represents four kingdoms: the Babylonian kingdom, the Medo-Persian kingdom, the Grecian kingdom, and the Roman kingdom. Now Daniel is going to make the statement in verse 44 of chapter 2 as he's going over this particular image. He's going to say that in the days of these kings, the iron and the iron clay kingdom, that the God of heaven is going to set up a different kingdom. Remember, if you will, Isaiah shed light on this back in chapter 2 and Micah did in chapter 5. About this kingdom that was going to be unlike these other kingdoms that would rise and fall. This was going to be a spiritual kingdom that was going to flow from the city of Jerusalem. And it was going to be a peaceful kingdom. Remember, if you will, Jesus, during his earthly domain, said, "My kingdom is what? Not of this world. Else what? Would my servant fight?" So he embraces Isaiah's statement. And notice, if you will, this iron kingdom takes place about 100, or begins before and goes through 100 AD after the death of Christ. So leading up to this iron kingdom, we open our Bibles to the book of Matthew chapter 1, and what do we read about? We read about the genealogy of who? Christ. Remember, we also talked about Isaiah's prophecy about the virgin birth of Christ. So notice, if you will, what we're beginning to do as we enter into the study of the book of Daniel, we're going to see how that this kingdom that the prophet saw came into existence, when it came into existence, and how long it's going to last, and how different it's going to be from the other kingdom. Now notice, if you will, what you're going to notice in chapter 3 is going to be where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is what happens to them. They're thrown into the fiery furnace. Now, many times we connect the lion's den to the fiery furnace. But it seems to be the case that the Babylonians punished their people by throwing them into a fiery furnace. Daniel was thrown into the lion's den under the Chaldeans, the Medes and the Persians had taken over. So he was under a different king, and it seems to be that the Medes and the Persians punished their people by throwing them into the lion's den. Two different types of punishment. But chapter 3 talks about them being tied, cast into the fiery furnace, and what happens? Didn't even singe your hair. What else happened?
They what?
There
was another
yes, there was an angel of God in there with them. Now remember, if you will, they put them, it would kind of like be jerking us out of here on Sunday. And Dale's got his best suit on. Bill's got his suit on. And some of you ladies dress pretty good. You don't wear this out in the yard. Well, he took those men and they bound them in their best clothes and threw them into that fire. And they found them walking, as you said, the fourth person. And their clothes was not good. And they were just walking in the fire. We're going to see another vision about a tree stump. Or a tree in chapter 4. And we're going to read about Belshazzar in chapter 5 and how the hand went on the wall, the fingers of the